rise up and step away. This is truly not your resting place, for her uncleanness binds one as a tether to the snare of grief. Micah chapter 2, verse 10. From the Word Green Version, 2003, that's our daily scripture for today, little children. Rise up and step away. This is truly not your resting place, for her uncleanness binds one as a tether to the snare of grief. And, so many thoughts have come to mind recently. It's so important when somebody makes a threat not to respond, because you need to watch them. When someone makes a threat, look straight into their eyes and continue watching them if you're in their presence. If you're not in their presence, watch what they do from a distance somehow, whether over the internet, online, or over whatever means you have to find out what they're doing. You watch them. But you don't respond to their threat because they've made a threat. And why would someone make a threat? Why would they make a threat? If they want to do something, they would do it. They make a threat because they want to get a response. So when someone makes a threat, simply do not respond. That's the answer. Watch what they do. Okay? And that's it. Then when you've seen what they do, then you can decide what you're going to do. Forget about the threat other than watching what they're going to do. What they do next. Watch what they do next. And I've thought about it, the ability to do mathematics, physics, to calculate anything in life, is the same ability that you need to figure out how finances work, or how the world economy works, or how any country's economy works. It's the same exact ability, mental capacity, the intellectual capacity. It's the same thing in all cases. So just to say that, well, you're good at this, but you might not be good at that, that's a nonsensical, that's an illegitimate thing. That's an illegitimate claim, right? And economy, in theory, the economic theory is not well established. Anyway, there's Keynesian, all the different schools of thought of economics, supply and demand. Well, that's what causes inflation. It's either not enough supply or too much demand. Well, which is it and how does it work? No one really knows how economy works. So, no one knows how economics works. Absolutely nobody knows. They think they do. They think they can say certain things, and they do say a lot of things, but it's all basically hand waving. That's all it is. It's even true of a lot of physics too. It's a lot of it. Even though we can prove that Einstein did what he did, it's better than what Newton said. We can verify it by measuring it. That doesn't mean Einstein was speaking the absolute truth, or that there's not a better theory than Einstein. He predicted the bending of light around large, heavy, massive objects in space, that you could see that light would bend because the space was curved. That was verifiable. So Einstein could be proven based on the observations. Newton didn't predict that there would be any bending of light. And the orbit of Mercury was another way that was used to verify what Einstein gave as his theory, right? But it was just a theory. It still is a theory and will always be a theory. And Einstein's theory was, it's just a theory. It's never going to be the truth. But it was what it was, and it is what it is. And it's just a lot of, just like everything else, it's a lot of hand waving. You can't say, well, oh, this is all well and good, but you can't solve this problem. I don't have to solve that problem. I don't have to solve your problems. The world is being brainwashed by the media into believing that they need a solution to their problems. And it's the same thing with being brainwashed by the drug companies and the healthcare services people, that they need help, and that individual people don't have the ability to do anything on their own. That's what they're being brainwashed into thinking. Then the government is brainwashing people into thinking, and the government brainwashes themselves into thinking that they're necessary. The people need us. We have to save the people. We have to, this is all the brainwashing that is being put into people's minds, that everyone's life has to be easy. We all have to make the the lives of everybody easy. Well, that's a ridiculous idea, because each person has this enormous potential, right? Even though we have different individual inherited abilities, we all have, every one of us has enormous, if we're human, enormous potential. You can't unlock the potential if you don't ever do any work. And you can't do any work if the government is teaching you don't do any work. We're going to do it all for you. So all this nonsense is you can't do it. You can't do it. You might be able to tell a good story, but you can't solve our problems is nonsense. You have to solve your own problems. That's the truth of it. You have to learn every day how to do it better, how to do things better, everything better. You have to learn how to do things. Learn how to get your health. Learn how to do this. On your own, you have to learn how to do it. Nobody's going to be able to teach you or give you the answer that makes your life easy, okay? The bust of Pindar, I think we're at actually paragraph 37 now. Well, let me just check. I counted them up, and I missed one yesterday. We were at 47. This is 40, paragraph of the article. We're in the article Joseph and Owen, Redemption of the Phoenix, and it came after the article Joseph. This article was written in 2000. It's hard to believe all the articles that were written around the same exact time. It was written in 2010, I believe, and Joseph was written at the end of 2009. I think that's right, but we have to go down and check. But Schliemann was paragraph 40. But, I mean, they're all written in this narrow, tight space of time. Let's look at the end of the article here and see what we have for the article list. Okay, it's right at the article. At the end of the article, there's a list of all the articles. I think, yeah, you might even be able to click on it if you go to the beginning and click on something. I'm not sure, though. Like, click on that. It doesn't do it. Some of the later articles you could click on something at the top, and it would jump down to the articles at the bottom. But we just scroll down, find the article. Here they are. So at the end of the article, we have these references to all the other articles. So when was Joseph written? Right here. Here it is. But the dating of the articles is also given above that. So we have Joseph was written at the end of 2009, because it was modified after that a little bit, but all of these articles that we're studying now were all written around 2010. The Ark of Urartu was written in 2011. And we've looked at this before. Let me get back to an article that came much later, if we can. Like Preservation or Crucible, I'll give a listing of all the articles. Valder, this is the Crucible. Is this part two or part one? This is part two, excellent. If we go down to part two, at the end, we'll find at the end of the last part of any article, you'll be able to find a listing of all the names of the previous articles. Here they are. So, at the Crucible article, we'd written all these articles. Well, this is in fact something I added later. I added a list of all the articles at the end of the Crucible article. So it lists all 18 articles up to Born and Raised, which was the most recent article. But 18 is Born and Raised, and then go back to number 10, the Ark of Urartu. Okay, but that doesn't give a date, right? So I want to find the dates for these. They're all listed here. Here they are. So under recent articles in this article, Crucible, at the end of part two, gives a list of all the articles and what dates are associated with them. Joseph was written at the end of 2009. Joseph and Owen was written the beginning of 2010, the first... That's a period of 5 days, 6 days. The Phoenix article was written in 6 days, in April of 2010, just after the other article, Joseph and Owen, that we're reading now. So Phoenix was written just after this article that we're reading. Moses was written in the same year, 2010, the article Moses. And these are lengthy articles. And then the Ark of Urartu was written, again, beginning in the same year. Oh, my goodness. And then it took a couple of years to write the Crucible after that. But this is a lot of research that was done here. And the same ability that could solve the economic not economics, excuse me, the chronological problem, the chronology of the world, the same ability that can solve the chronology of the world can solve every single problem in the world. Okay, but it requires work. It's not going to be, well, we're going to just listen to you and you tell us what to do. That's not how problems are solved. Each person has ability, right? And we have free will. And the economic system is based on, well, I'm going to take money from you in exchange for giving you something. That whole idea is faulty because it's not based on, I'm going to give something voluntarily. It's not based on volunteering anything, right? It's based on, well, you're going to have to give me something. I'm going to steal money from you. I'm going to take from you. It's based on taking. So the whole, all the economic theories are based on the wrong idea in the first place. You can't understand the truth of the world by understanding economic theory. Look at 1 John, the letter of 1 John, verse 16 of chapter 2. It says, everything in the world, the desire of the flesh and the desire of the eyes and the showy display of one's means of life, does not originate with the Father, but originates with the world. So it's just like that same thing with the economic system. It originates with the world. You're not going to learn anything about how to do the things that you should do or how to do things right by studying economic theory. That's not going to teach you how to do things right. Maybe that's why I never studied economic theory. I don't know. But it's not important to study that. That's only going to teach you about the ways of robbery that people are using in the world. That's all it's going to teach you about. And what results from that, which is all also very shaky theory. It's not well-established theory, partly because, of course, it's based on deceit and lies and, you know, untruth. And, you know, I'm talking to you now. I've had a lot of sleepless nights recently, but that's fine. Because look what Paul wrote about that. He said about his life as a Christian. He said, in labor and toil, in sleepless nights often. So it's okay to have sleepless nights. You shouldn't be, you shouldn't be saying, oh, I can't have any sleepless nights. We have to solve this problem. I have sleepless nights. That shouldn't be our attitude. It's a wrong attitude. Look what Jesus said at Matthew 6 and 34. Everything. He said, that was John. Matthew 6 and 34. I thought I clicked on that. He said, never be anxious about the next day, Jesus said. Never be anxious about the next day, for the next day will have its own anxieties. Sufficient for each day is its own badness. So this whole idea about, oh, we have to know what to do. What are we going to do next year? This is the wrong attitude. It's, what are you going to do today? Forget about next year. Tomorrow, you'll figure out what to do tomorrow. And each person has to work to their ability. According to their ability, you're not going to have everything solved for you by your government or by your healthcare provider or any of that. You have to do the work. Okay. Is that enough of that? That's enough of that, I think. We covered that. Okay, come back. So, yeah, the article Joseph, I've got something to show you there. When we dated the patriarch Joseph in the article Joseph, you know, Joseph is a person in the Bible. We gave him a date and we found, this is from the article Joseph, which was the article that came beginning, in fact, it was entirely written at the end of 2009, toward the end of December of that year, December 24th to 29th of 2009, this article was written. And it's actually quite lengthy. It's got a lot of information. So how did I write it in 5 days? But that's what was done. And it's got these things about Joseph that, because we dated Adam, you know, and this is the first article that ever talks about all these dates. Except for the article Green, in which we placed a summary of this article at the beginning of that one, after we did the research for this next article that came after Green. So Green and then Joseph. But this is the first article that really actually explains this chronology, with Adam dated 5550 BCE. We arrived at that date for Adam. based on the Bible. And the Greek Septuagint gives the age of each patriarch at the birth of their son. You can calculate back and find, using all the information given from the Bible, you can find the date of Adam, 5550 BCE. But that's according to the Greek Septuagint version of the Bible. The year that is, according to that, 3,700 years after Adam is 5550 minus 3,700. Okay? 5550 minus 3,700. I'm hoping to go to bed early tonight so I can get up and go shopping tomorrow. That's my goal. Because I've been sleep deprived. I had 0 hours sleep last night. I sleep during the daytime, but I'm calling it last night. And then today, which is, I guess that was really last night, but it was the same night. It's just, or the same day. I just didn't have any sleep until I got 4 hours sleep, later on today. Just woke up recently. Small number of, when did I wake up? 7 o'clock? Yeah, so it's like 3.5 hours later. So I haven't been up for long, but this is in the evening now here, and 1850 is the difference between 5550 and 3700, right? So this is what we found out in the article Joseph, long before I knew that Joseph was described by the story of Zechariah Sitchin, as he related it from the Egyptian historians, that Joseph had built an enormous waterway and an irrigation system when Joseph was 100 years old. I didn't know about that. And I didn't know that it took him 3 years to do it, so I didn't know that the age 103 was significant at that time. I didn't know, and that would be exactly the year 1850 when Joseph was 103, but I didn't know that. I knew none of that. So this is the remarkable thing. I was able to figure this out from the genealogy without knowing about Joseph's, and there's no way of explaining how I did it, except that I explained it in the article Joseph at quite a bit of length and with quite a bit of detail. But it's really difficult to, it's very difficult to understand how I did it. It's impossible, in fact. There's no way of knowing how I did it. But it's not possible. I didn't use the normal human reasoning, right? I didn't use that. I used some other type of reasoning that was given to me at the time when I needed it, when I was doing all this intense research. Now, these numbers that I came up with, there was a number 3625, which is the number that Demetrius gave for the time from Adam until, it's exactly, what is 3625 after Adam? It's 19, what is 3636? Let's do it. Did I close that? I did, okay. 5550. Minus 3625. This is going to give us 1925. Right. Yeah, right. Okay. But see, Demetrius gave the number 3625 because he didn't allow for any extra years. When we allowed the extra years, 11 extra years, because there were 22 generations and the uncertainty of each generation for the birth of a child is about half a year. If you're giving everything as round numbers of years, you know, he was 90 years old. Well, was he 89 and a half or 90 and a half? You don't know. There's an uncertainty of plus or minus one half. So when we allow for the extra, and we're saying there's 6 months extra on average, right? If somebody's a certain age at the birth of their child, we're saying there's some extra months involved every time, and on average it's going to be half a year for each generation. So that's why we added 11 years for 22 generations from Adam to Jacob, 22 generations, or either to Jacob or Joseph, whatever. But I got the number 36 by adding 11 to 3625 And we arrived at 5550 minus 3636 is 1914. That was when Jacob came into Egypt. Now, that just happened to be the mirror date to the commencement of World War I in the Common Era. But this is BCE 1914. It's the mirror date of the World War, right? That just made our... It made everything simpler. Well, I thought, well, that's great if we can just get dates that always correspond in the mirror of the Common Era, we'll be able to remember what the dates are, right? But I didn't do it on purpose. But this is, and the thing is, how well it works is the proof of its usefulness. And truth is more, I think, critically dependent on usefulness than anything else, right? It has to be useful. But this number 3636, we had that number. Where did I get 3627? Here I explain in the article Joseph why I added the 11 extra years. So all that's in the article Joseph. You can look that up. But where? Let's look up 36. I'm digressing because I'm getting interested again in studying. We're gonna do this article Joseph maybe soon. But there's an article that came after the one we're doing now that's very good also called Phoenix. I don't know which one we'll do first. We might, too, believe that Joseph knew the number 3627. I wrote in the article Joseph. Why? Okay. Why 3627? Oh, he stood before Pharaoh in that year. Is that true? Well, that's the year he stood before Pharaoh. Yeah, 3627. Okay. So that's, yeah. Yeah, right. 1923 was 3627 after 5550. I keep closing this app. Keep closing it. 5550 minus 1923, which was the year that Joseph stood before Pharaoh, was 3627, right? Let's keep it open. Okay, so, but also, do you know that the year 1923... subtract 73, okay? 1923 subtract 73 is 1850, and that year 1850 is one-third of 5550. 5550 divided by 3 is 1850. And 1850 is the year when Joseph completed the work on the waterworks at the age of 103. Joseph was 103 years old when he worked on that great waterwork project. And that's according to the Egyptian historians, as related by Zechariah Sitchin, as we talked about already. Okay. I mean, we're talking about this number 73, but I knew about it previously. I knew about the year 1850 in the article Joseph. And there's no reason I would have known about it, because I didn't know anything about. But there are reasons that I was able to deduce the number 1850, and I did it using the ideas I explained in the article Joseph, okay? So that's what we have to get to later. Can't do it today, but we're going to get back to Schliemann, which is, I believe, paragraph 40. And then, so that was 40, and then we have 41, and this is 42, the coat of arms of Indonesia, 42. And then we had 43, Poseidon, identified with horses. 44 was Helios, the Greek god of the sun. And 45, I missed this one. We draw from what Pindar wrote. 45. No, that's right. 45. Oh, okay, I did get it right. I got it right when I wrote it down, yeah, in the title of the video. So it's 45. That's good. And the audio, too. I wrote the title as that we ended off at 45. So this is 46, our paragraph for today. Busta Pindar, it would be incredibly narrow-minded to think that the Greek gods and goddesses, Egyptian and Roman mythology, the Greek gods and goddesses, Egyptian and Roman mythology, and myriad manifestations of these embodied in the culture and history of a whole array of nations all stem from Joseph and Jacob. Or would it? In all honesty, perhaps not. As long as we stay open-minded, we may derive great benefit when a large number of things can be explained by one simple theory. Thea, this Greek goddess. Remember, she's called the mild. She's Thea of many names, but she's the wife of Hyperion, but she's also called mild-eyed. Where do we see that? Mild-eyed. This wife of Hyperion, mild-eyed. Let's look it up. We're running out of time. I got mild-eyed Euryphasa. It's in the paragraph 44 there. Mild-eyed Euryphasa. Remember, she's called mild-eyed, the far-shining one. Well, the stars don't shine as bright as the sun, so it's mild. The shining of the stars is milder than the sun. That's why she's the same as this person called Night in the Egyptian mythology. She's mild-eyed because the stars of the nighttime are milder, and she's shining from far away. The stars are far away, as we know, compared to the sun. So that proves that Euryphasa is the same person as Nut or Night, the Egyptian goddess who was the mother of Osiris and also the wife of Geb. And that identifies, therefore, Joseph as Osiris. We have a lot of good correspondence there. The mother of the sun, the wife of, Hyperion is also called, right? Mother of Helios, Thea of many names, called that by Pindar. She's additionally cow-eyed, in other words, mild-eyed. We talked about that a little bit yesterday. But let's see how much we can cover today, because we're running out of time quickly here. Euryphasa, okay? I want to keep it to 33 minutes. Is her name Euryphasa, cow-eyed Euryphasa, mother of the sun. She's married to Hyperion. Is this not like the goddess Nut? N-W-T? Because W is the same as like a strong U, isn't it? It's W, Nut. Or Night, because the double U is like a double V. Double V in French, it's double V. And V is written, it's called upsilon in Greek. The V, it looks like a V, but it's really a Y sound, right? So, and Y is pronounced sometimes as an I, long I, like Night. So we have Night, Eve, Rachel, the same person as Nut, the wife of Jacob. So the wife of Hyperion is also the same person as the wife of Jacob, so Jacob is Hyperion. And the god Hyperion is known as Day. He's actually known as Day. Okay, so Day was married to Night, as Jacob was married to Rachel. And as Hyperion was married to Nut, or Night. And Hyperion is known as Day, but Hyperion is translated as over-own, right? Over-own, Hyperion. Own in Greek Heliopolis, and Egyptian Iunu in Hebrew, Awun, or Awen, is the city of the sun. Own, that is, the city of the sun. And Own is contained in the Greek names Poseidon, Cronus, and Hyperion. Poseidon, Cronus, Hyperion. Own is the Greek form of the Egyptian word Iunu, while Heliopolis is the name of the city, Iunu, as related in the Greek mythology, while with Helios, the lord of the city. Okay. Heliopolis is the name of the city, Iunu, as related in the Greek mythology with Helios, the lord of the city. Cow-eyed relates to the moon's light as distinctly less powerful. Mild-eyed, the moon's light. See, moonlight, cow-eyed, relates to the moon's light, can also relate to starlight. Less powerful when compared with the blazing heat of Helios, Thea's sun. For Night to be the wife of Day also makes a complete circle, the mother, Night, giving birth to the sun, Helios. You know, what does the night give birth to? The day, right? I mean, it's like the day follows the night, and therefore the night gives birth to the day. Husband and wife are the perfect complement of one another. Day and night, it's Geb who's married to Nut, right? But Hyperion is married to Euryphasa, and she's equivalent to Nut. So day is married to night, essentially, is the idea, right? So husband and wife are perfectly complementary, and father and son are like father, like son, by being of the daylight in nature as day and sun. So the son of the daytime, Hyperion, his son was called Helios, the Greek god of the sun. So that Hyperion was called the day, the god of the daytime, but his son was the sun itself, Helios, the sun god. So, like father, like son, daytime and sunshine, the sun. So, when we look closely, the goddesses Nut, or night, and Thea appear to be stories based on or interwoven tightly with Rachel, the mother of Joseph. Since she was not the mother of Judah, the god Helios, from this brief analysis, would appear to be the man known as Joseph. Yeah. So, since this person, Rachel, who's connected to Nut by being the wife of Jacob, and, you know, Nut is the wife of Geb, and Geb is a name similar to Jacob. You know, we have all the proof we need that since Rachel is not the mother of Judah, therefore the god Helios is not Judah, he is Joseph. The son of Rachel. Helios must be Joseph then, the son of Jacob, to complete, and therefore Helios is not the same person as Judah, from whom the Messiah would come. Helios is this person, Joseph, to complete the story, Joseph of the Bible. To complete the story, though, we want to consider how Joseph might fit this image. Then we want to consider other Greek gods and see what other redundancy exists, and we want to repeat all of the detailed analysis with Jacob and the rest of his family, if possible, in order to see, first, whether the mythology fits the facts of the Jewish history, and second, what can mythology then teach us about the Jews that the Bible perhaps can't? These things are not for the purpose of convincing us only. They are also for the provision of what has been lacking for so long, what is a part of every family history, but which we are lacking, which we were lacking. What is a part of every family history, but which we were lacking, which are... Right? These things that are a part of every family history. The connecting anecdotes. The link between history and the family tradition. And these are the things that the mythology might have held all these years. And that's it for today's study. We'll be getting into this in greater depth. That was paragraphs 46 and 47 today of the article Joseph and Owen. It's February 7th, 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 22:57 hours Canadian Eastern Time. And thank you so much for listening and watching once again. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Sissy and this is Star saying bye for now. Joseph and Owen, we've been studying, and we looked at the article Joseph a little bit today too. But we're going to be looking at so many of these different things. I've been looking into this again recently. These three articles, Joseph, Joseph and Owen, and Phoenix, are absolutely incredible. They're just so powerful. Bye for now.